Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Monday, the 20th of March, the first day of spring, 2023. Your number one way to start the day here at the Todd Albaugh Show, along with Mr. Aaron Zommers, our producer-engineer. We have made it to hour number three, Mr. Zommers. Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. And glad to, as much as I love to dump on Trump and talk about the actual, yes. That trivializes it.
Right.
But as much as I like to make those important issues known, it'll be nice to talk about other things.
Yes, yes. We'll move on in this hour. We will, and again, it's kind of a yin and the yang, right? I mean, after we've kind of gone through so much Trumpism lately, and there's a certain amount of, if we're human, right, a certain mindset, you're like, well, you know what? This is a long time coming, and you're glad, in a certain way, you're glad to see justice brought. But as I said, for myself, I find it as a rather sad time for our country and, not something you want to go through. It doesn't do anybody any good to have a former president indicted in terms of, boosting morale, in my opinion, other than the fact that you're seeing justice being served. And that is always a good thing. But yes, we'll move on from the Trumpster this hour and talk about another president or two. Very presidential today as far as news goes. This very intriguing story over the weekend in the New York Times that President Carter, former President Carter, may have in fact been set up for defeat in 1980. And we have one person's story about that. So bringing you that this hour. But first, a couple of headlines for you. What you need to know as far as weather, news, and actually sports. This hour on the 20th of March, 2023, it is 8 past the hour of 10 o'clock. Weather forecast for today in Richland Center, WRCE in southwest Wisconsin. Partly sunny and breezy today, a high of 47 degrees in the RC. Then for tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 32. Tomorrow, Tuesday, mostly cloudy, a chance for rain at a high of 52 degrees. Up in Wausau, Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, mostly cloudy today, a high of 38. Tonight, a slight chance of a snow shower and a low of 21. Tomorrow, on Tuesday, a 40% chance of some light snow and a high of 34. Over at Amory, WLAK, Lake Air Radio, mostly sunny, a high of 35. For tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 22. And Tuesday, a chance for snow, and then rain likely, a high of 35. None of the accumulations, at least for the next day or so, should be heavy. Maybe some more snow accumulations coming in towards the end of the week, according to Ms. Kara Foster, our meteorologist. Say that 10 times fast. No, thank you. Well, Wisconsin upset number one seed Ohio State in the NCAA Hockey National Title game in Duluth, Minnesota yesterday, capturing an unprecedented 7th championship in the women's Frozen Four with a 1-0 victory. This is how it sounded on the call by Reed Magnum on 100.9 radio yesterday afternoon.
All the way on the other side of the ice. Confer's going to tangle her up. Time's going to expire, and that's it. Wisconsin wins the 2023 National Championship, their third of the last four tournaments. The Badgers, the first program in history to win 7 NCAA women's ice hockey titles.
That was Reed Magnum on the call from iHeartRadio 100.9 here in Madison. A great call it was. Freshman forward Kirsten Sims' first period goal stood up as the game winner, thanks to a 31-save performance from redshirt senior goalie Cammie Cronish. The Badgers' 7th national title broke a tie with Minnesota for the most ever by a women's hockey program in the Frozen Four. Coach Mark Johnson has been behind the Badgers' bench for 19 years, his 7th national title. Coach Johnson, how will he spend the day today? His first thing he's going to do, here's what he said after the win.
I'm going to grab the trophy tomorrow, and then I'm taking over to sit down with my mom and get a picture with my mom, because you're not doing real well. And so it's something that I'll be able to have with me for a long period of time, because she was a big part of my dad in coaching, and part of the Badger legacy with her cowbell at the Coliseum, and a lot of people still talk about that. So in the back of my mind, I said, if we win this thing, I'm going to grab that trophy and go sit down with her, and a big, she'll have a big smile on her face.
An emotional coach, Mark Johnson, of the Badger hockey team. What a great victory for him. His 7th national title in his 19 years as head coach at Wisconsin. He adds to that his national title with the men's team when his dad was his coach back in the 70s, a gold medal in the 1980 men's Winter Olympics, and then as a silver medal as the head coach of the women's Olympic team. What a history. Mark Johnson, and what a win by the Badgers. Congratulations to each and every one of them. Badger men's basketball team also got a win yesterday in the NIT tournament. They beat Liberty and move on to the quarterfinals of the NIT tournament. They will play Oregon out in Oregon, on Eugene, that is, at, I believe, 8 o'clock this Wednesday. The game can be heard on WRCE and WLAK and other stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. It'll be broadcast on television on ESPN. The Badger men's moving on. Marquette men's basketball not so lucky in the NCAA tournament. The number two seed was taken down by the legend of March, Coach Tom Izzo, and the Michigan State Spartans. They beat him in what a great game it was yesterday. Congratulations to the Marquette Golden Eagles, as they had a great season under Coach Shaka Smart, but they will not be moving on as they were beaten yesterday. That is a quick, I guess basically a sports update. We'll come back with this great story on President Carter after this. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, and this is the Todd Hallball Show. Welcome back to the Todd Hallball Show. It is now 15 past the hour of 10 o'clock. Glad to have you along on the show this morning. Interesting story in the New York Times. We're going to delve into a little bit this segment by Peter Baker. Peter Baker, a great author, great writer. If you want to read the whole story, it's at thenewyorktimes.com. It's entitled A Four-Decade Secret, One Man's Story of Sabotaging Carter's Re-Election. Subheadline, a prominent Texas politician said he unwittingly took part in a 1980 tour of the Middle East with a clandestine agenda. This is from March 18th over the weekend in the New York Times. Not going to sit here and read every single word verbatim. It's a rather long story. But why is this important? And again, it goes back to something I said earlier on the show today. I understand it can be difficult to admit you were wrong, because I've had to do it. I continue to do it. The people that I worked for in the Republican Party, Dale Schultz, Scott Klug, John Sharpless, great guys. Overall, I think they improved our state and our country more than they harmed it by a great deal. Did a lot of great things for local communities. Cheryl Elbers, somebody I didn't work for directly, I helped on our campaigns, did a lot of good for the state of Wisconsin. Steve Freese, former speaker pro tem and assembly person, didn't work for him directly, but helped on his campaigns. Did a lot of good for Southwest Wisconsin. Steve Gunderson, who I never worked for directly, but helped on his campaigns, U.S. Congress. Did a heck of a lot of good. Helped co-author the Americans with Disabilities Act. Helped bring access to millions of Americans. Increased Pell Grants so that working moms and single dads and non-traditional students could go back and get a college education. Tommy Thompson, four-time governor, elected governor of Wisconsin. Not perfect by any means, but did a heck of a lot to transform the state. Highway 29 that connects now Green Bay to essentially the Twin Cities, a four-lane, beautiful highway, would have never gotten done without Tommy Thompson. Several environmental laws would have never got pushed forward. I shouldn't say environmental laws, but conservation types of practices. The Lower Wisconsin Riverway, one of the great gems of this state, protected by Republicans and work along with guys like Spencer Black on the Democratic side, a bipartisan task between Spencer Black, Dale Schultz, Tommy Thompson, others that made the Lower Wisconsin Riverway Project possible to preserve that great part of our state. The reason I go through this and tick off the laundry list is because I want people to understand. I'm not sitting here as someone who's super bitter, like, oh, I just don't think there was anything good about the Republican Party, or I should say about Republicans or people elected under the Republican banner. I just ticked off those examples. And there are probably more of people who did some very good things that were Republicans in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. But if you look at overall the National Party in particular and where that party was taking America and where it has taken it to now, not something I'm proud of to have been associated with. And glad I left in 2011. Not a Democrat either right now. Independent. Don't belong to any party. That's why we use the line, pursuing the truth, wherever it may lead. What I'm after is just getting the facts for all of us. Just the facts. Just the truth. And then I think that you folks, that each of us individually, are smart enough to decide who to vote for based on the truth. Because I have faith in you to do the right thing. I have faith in the people of our communities of Richland Center and Wausau and Amory and elsewhere to do the right thing, given the facts. So that's the preface of all this. And here's to say that back in 1980 was the first year at 12 years of age that I got involved in politics, volunteering, going door to door, and doing campaigning for Ronald Reagan. And if you remember, if you're of a certain age, you don't remember, but in the re-election for President Jimmy Carter, he'd been elected in 1976 over President Ford. And there was an energy crisis. Gas was at then record prices. There were lines for gasoline. Electricity was expensive. Blackouts, brownouts. And one of the big issues was the Iranian hostage crisis. The embassy at the time, the U.S. embassy, had been overrun and taken over by extremists in Tehran, and several members of the U.S. Embassy were held hostage. And it went on through most of the presidential campaign election in 1980. And then, miraculously, the day that Ronald Reagan got sworn into office, later that night, suddenly the hostages were released. And at the time, the feeling was, well, thank God that Ronald Reagan got elected president, because they knew that he meant business and that Reagan got the credit. Only been president, not even a full 24 hours, but he got the credit just by his sheer presence of being president, that the Iranians were so terrified of Reagan that they released the hostages. And as a former Republican, that's what you believed and that's what you espoused for years. But as my granddad used to say, the cream always rises to the top. The truth will eventually come out. Dateline, Washington. It has been more than four decades, but Ben Barnes said he remembers it vividly. His longtime political mentor invited him on a mission to the Middle East. What Mr. Barnes said he did not realize until later was the real purpose of the mission: to sabotage the re-election campaign of the President of the United States. It was 1980, and Jimmy Carter was in the White House, bedeviled by a hostage crisis in Iran that had paralyzed his presidency and hampered his effort to win a second term. Mr. Carter's best chance for victory was to free the 52 Americans held captive before Election Day. That was something that Mr. Barnes said his mentor was determined to prevent. His mentor was John B. Conley Jr., a titan of American politics and former Texas governor who had served three presidents. and just lost his own bid for the White House. A former Democrat, Mr. Conley had sought the Republican nomination in 1980, only to be swamped by former Governor Ronald Reagan of California. Now Mr. Conley resolved to help Mr. Reagan and beat Mr. Carter in the process. Mr. Barnes said to make his own case for becoming Secretary of State or Defense in a new administration. What happened next? Mr. Barnes has largely kept secret for nearly 43 years. Mr. Conley said, took him to one Middle East capital after another that summer, meeting with a host of regional leaders to deliver a blunt message to be passed on to Iran. And the message was, don't release the hostages before the election. Mr. Reagan will win and give you a better deal. Then shortly after returning home, Mr. Barnes said, Mr. Conley reported to William J. Casey, the chairman of Mr. Reagan's campaign and later director of the Central Intelligence Agency, briefing him about the trip in an airport lounge. Mr. Carter's camp has long suspected that Mr. Casey or someone else in Mr. Reagan's orbit sought to secretly torpedo efforts to liberate the hostages before the election, and books have been written on what became to be called the October Surprise. But congressional investigators debunked previous theories of that having happened. Mr. Conley did not figure into those investigations. His involvement, as described by Mr. Barnes, adds a new understanding to what may have happened in that hard-fought, pivotal election year. With Mr. Carter, now 98, and in hospice care, Mr. Barnes said he felt compelled to come forward and correct the record. Quote, history needs to know that this happened. Mr. Barnes, who turns 85 himself next month, said in one of several interviews, his first with a news organization about the episode. Quote, I think it's so significant, and I guess knowing that the end is near for President Carter put it on my mind more and more and more. I just feel like we've got to go down this road in some way. Mr. Barnes is no shady figure foreign arms dealer with questionable credibility like some of the characters who fueled previous iterations of the October Surprise theory. He was one of the most prominent figures in Texas, the youngest Speaker of the House of Representatives, and later Lieutenant Governor. He was such an influential figure that he helped a young George W. Bush get into the Texas Air National Guard rather than be exposed to the draft and sent to Vietnam. Lyndon B. Johnson, yes, that one, predicted that Mr. Barnes himself would become president someday. Confirming Mr. Barnes' account is problematic after so much time. Mr. Conley and Mr. Casey and other central figures have long since died, and Mr. Barnes has no diaries or memos to corroborate his accusations and account. But he has no obvious reason to make up the story, and indeed express trepidation at going public because of reactions to fellow Democrats. So I want to stop there and just tell you where we're at on this, because this is so fascinating. This is a guy, this Barnes character from Texas, who became the youngest state or speaker of the House of Representatives in Texas, was a personal friend to LBJ, knew some of the highest figures in American politics, and now in his late 80s himself, is coming forward to say what he saw, what he did in 1980. And essentially, not essentially, is saying that President Carter was set up, maybe not by Reagan himself, but by people close to Reagan who wanted to get high appointments in the Reagan administration. Conley, John Conley, famous, powerful guy in Texas, former governor, former senator, wanted to be Secretary of Defense. So he went on this mission to try to gain Reagan's favor, hoping that it would come back and help him. And the author here, Peter Baker, makes it clear that it was hard to corroborate this story by Barnes, but that there's no obvious reason the guy is going to lie. And as you're going to hear here, there was a little bit of corroboration. There are things that do add up based on travel documents and what is available. There are things in the presidential library that are available. And if true, which we believe it probably is, it means that Jimmy Carter got railroaded. Got absolutely railroaded. And we'll come back and talk more about this in a minute. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, I got my mail late last night, a letter from
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 10:33 on the Civic Media Radio Network. That is about a half an hour away from the top of the hour when we will turn it over to our friends at WAUK, the Shaw, across the Civic Media Radio Network. That is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Matnier. Great folks. Hear how their weekend went and also what's new in their neck of the woods and across the state of Wisconsin. It's As Goes Wisconsin, always informative, entertaining. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you smile with the great Kristen Bry and Jane Matnier. Tune in at the little after 11 o'clock, a little after the top of the hour, the show immediately following ours. Right now, looking at this story from over the weekend, blockbuster story in the New York Times by Peter Baker. About a four-decade-old secret, one man's story of sabotaging Carter's re-election. The man, Ben Barnes, saying that he was part of this operation, essentially, to make sure that Reagan didn't win in 1980. His story, back to the article here, Mr. Barnes identified four living people he had said that he had confided in over the years. They were Mark Upton Grove, president of the LBJ Foundation, Tom Johnson, a former aide to Lyndon Johnson, no relation, a different Lyndon Johnson, who later became publisher of the Los Angeles Times and president of CNN, Larry Temple, a former aide to Mr. Conley, and Lyndon Johnson, the L.H. Brands, a University of Texas historian. So four people that this guy confided this story in over the years. And the reporter went to all four of them, and they confirmed in recent days that Mr. Barnes shared the story with them years ago. Quote, as far as I know, Ben never lied to me, unquote, Tom Johnson said. The others echoed the same sentiment. Mr. Brands included three paragraphs about Mr. Barnes' recollection in a 2015 biography on Reagan, but the account didn't really generate a lot of public notice at the time. So the reporter goes to the Lyndon Baines Johnson Library and Museum and confirms part of Barnes' story. An itinerary found this past week in Mr. Conley's files indicated that, in fact, he did leave Houston on July 18, 1980, for a trip that would take him to Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Israel before returning to Houston on August 11th. Mr. Barnes was listed on the manifest as accompanying him. Brief news accounts of the report at the time of Mr. Conley's stops with scant detail describes the trip as strictly private. Mr. Conley's files confirms that Mr. Barnes's memory that there was contact with the Reagan camp early in the trip under the headline, Governor Reagan, a note from an assistant reported Mr. Conley, on July 21st, 1980, quote, Nancy Reagan called. They are at the ranch. He wants to talk to you about being in on strategy meetings, unquote. There was no record of the response. Mr. Barnes recalled joining Mr. Conley in early September to sit down with Casey to report on their trip during a three-hour meeting in the American Airlines lounge at what was then called the Dallas-Fort Worth Regional Airport. An entry in Mr. Conley's calendar found this past week showed that he traveled to Dallas in September 10th. A search of Mr. Conley's archives at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University turned up no documents indicating he was in Dallas then or not. Mr. Barnes said he was certain the point of Mr. Conley's trip was to get a message to the Iranians to hold the hostages until after the election. Quote, I'll go to my grave believing that that was the purpose of the trip, he said. It wasn't freelancing because Casey was so interested in hearing as soon as we got back to the United States, Mr. Casey added. He wanted to know whether they were going to hold the hostages. None of that establishes, of course, whether Mr. Reagan knew about the trip, nor could Mr. Barnes, that's the main focus of the story here, could say that Mr. Casey directed Mr. Conley to take the journey. So I understand Barnes is the guy that worked under Casey and Conley. Likewise, Barnes says he does not know if the message transmitted to multiple Middle Eastern leaders got to the Iranians, much less whether it influenced their decision-making. But Iran did hold the hostages until after the election, which Mr. Reagan won and did not release them until minutes after noon on January 20th, 1981, just as Mr. Carter, that is, had left office. John B. Conley III, the governor's eldest son, said in an interview on Friday that he remembered his father taking the trip to the Middle East, but never heard anything about whether what happened there or not. No mention was made in any meetings I was in on about being sent to the Iranians, Mr. Conley said. It doesn't sound like my dad, he added. I can't challenge Ben's memory about it, but it's not consistent with my memory of the trip. So here you have a son trying to defend his dead father, which, okay, I get that. Suspicions about the Reagan's camp interactions with Iran circulated quietly for years until Gary Sick, a former national security aide to Mr. Carter, published a guest essay in the New York Times in April of 1991 advancing the theory, followed by the book called The October Surprise. The term, originally used by the Reagan camp to describe fears that Mr. Carter would manipulate the hostage crisis to effect a release just before the election. To forestall such a scenario, Mr. Casey was alleged to have met with representatives in Iran in July and August of 1980 in Madrid to deal with the deal supposedly finalized in Paris in October, in which a future Reagan administration would ship arms to Iran through Israel in exchange for the hostages being held until after the election. So that was the deal that was being talked about. Advance to the Iranians. Hold the hostages. Reagan will make a better deal. He'll get you better arms. I'm going to give you a paraphrase of the next part of this story. The House and Senate basically did investigations on this, had a 968-page report, and they said that Casey was not in Madrid at the time of the covert dealings and could not be backed up by credible testimony. But still, a White House memo produced in 1991 by a lawyer to former President George H.W. Bush reported the existence of, quote, a cable from the Madrid embassy indicating that Bill Casey was in town for purposes unknown. And then it kind of goes on back and forth about that particular meeting. Then it goes on to news of Mr. Barnes's account came as validation to some of Mr. Carter's remaining advisors. Gerald Rafshoon, who was Carter's White House communication director, said any interference may have changed history. Quote, if we had gotten the hostages home, we'd have won. I really believe that. It's pretty damn outrageous, he said. Mr. Conley, of course, was a political giant raised in Texas, was a big influencer, was actually in the car when President Kennedy got shot in Dallas. He ended up, of course, being later indicted on charges of perjury and conspiracy. And along the way, Mr. Conley found a political protege. That was Mr. Barnes, who became, as he says, more like a godson to him. So this was all set up for years. The two stayed on good terms. Mr. Barnes said he had no idea of the purpose of the Middle East trip when Mr. Conley invited him. They traveled to the region on a Gulfstream jet owned by Superior Oil. And only after they sat down with the first Arab leader did Mr. Barnes learn what Mr. Conley was really up to. And here's the key phrase. According to Barnes, Conley said, quote, look, Ronald Reagan's going to be elected president, and you need to get the word to Iran that they're going to make a better deal with Reagan than they are Carter, Barnes recalled. He said, it would be very smart for you to pass the word to the Iranians to wait until after this general election is over. Unquote. And boy, I tell you, I'm sitting here and I heard it. And so now it dawns on me. I realize why we're there, said Barnes. He said that except for Israel, Mr. Conley repeated the same message at every stop in the region to leaders such as President Anwar el-Sadat of Egypt. He thought his friend's motive was clear. Quote, it became very clear to me that Conley was running for Secretary of State or Defense, Mr. Barnes said. Conley was later offered the Energy Secretary position, but declined. Go to the phones. Find out what you think. Tom in Richland County. Tom, welcome back to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Todd. Turns out that's the epilogue to a much longer chapter. So it's been out in public and it's been in court. And what I'm telling you isn't a conspiracy. It's actually been all stated in court that the money that they sold parts to Iran in exchange for holding the prisoners became the money they gave the Contras in Nicaragua. And they needed more, so they got the Contras in Nicaragua with the drug cartels to bring crack cocaine to L.A. and create the whole thing about crack cocaine in L.A. This all came out of Reagan, and you can say, well, he didn't know nothing because he was having Alzheimer's, and there's reports of him looking out the window talking like he was one of his B-movies when he's on Air Force One. Whether that's true or not, it was definitely George H.W. Bush, head of CIA, now vice president, and all his gang of guys that did the plumbers and all them all came out of this. This is all our history that people don't know. It's quite amazing.
Well, I'm not sure it's fair. I mean, do you really believe that Reagan had Alzheimer's, particularly in his first term? I don't think that. Do you think
that? Well, they were saying that near the end of his term, he would be looking out the window.
Oh, yeah.
And just kind of mumbling.
I think other
people are running the show. Whether you believe Reagan was doing it or not, it's fine.
Sure.
I believe he definitely gave him permission.
No, I think you know, that's a whole other ball of wax or another story for another time. But yeah, I think Reagan certainly had early Alzheimer's in his last year or so of office. Like, that's clear. But what I think is so interesting in this New York Times article is this Barnes guy is saying that Conley was running, basically wanted to be, you know, Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, and was doing this to garner then Governor Reagan's favor so that he would get some big appointment. And after all of this allegedly happened, Conley was offered the Energy Secretary, but Cap Weinberger got the big appointment. What the heck did Cap Weinberger ever do for Reagan? I mean, did he go to the Middle East?
Well, they created this whole situation of trading it for to the Nicaraguas for the Contras, they call them.
Right, right.
And then that wasn't even enough money, so then they actually literally sold crack cocaine in L.A. And the CIA brought in heroin from the Golden Triangle during the early Vietnam days. This is nothing new. It's all connected. And so I know you don't want to go down all these rabbit holes, but it's all one big rabbit hole.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, until now, we've never had someone who allegedly was directly involved in this meeting or these meetings actually come out on the record and say, yeah, I was there and this is what I heard. We never really had that until this report, the New York Times. I'm not disagreeing with the history that you're laying out here, but I think what's so interesting is we have finally someone who is willing to go on the record and say this. And now you have former President Jimmy Carter in hospice care in the final days of his life at 98. And how do you think he feels? I mean, how do you think this guy feels knowing this is probably what happened to him and he could never prove it until now?
Yeah, well, he was also part of the establishment that did stuff like that, so hard to say. Anyway, thanks for listening to me.
Right. You're welcome. Bye. Tom Crofton, thank you very much. We appreciate calling in. I mean, come on now, Tom. Are you saying that everybody's a schmuck? I don't think everybody's a schmuck.
I think a lot of people are schmucks.
Well, maybe. But I think, I just think this is so fascinating that you know, Carter, now on his deathbed, essentially, is finally having someone come out and say, yeah, it was true. I can't imagine how he feels about that.
Yeah, I wonder if they're even telling him or not.
I would think so.
I would think so, too. I think this is a good thing to hear.
Right? the article sums up here, but as the years have passed, Barnes said he has often thought an injustice had been done to Mr. Carter. Discussing the trip now, he indicated was his way of making amends. Quote, I just want history to reflect that Carter got a little bit of a bad deal about the hostages, he said. He didn't have a fighting chance with those hostages still in the embassy in Iran. A little bit of a bad deal? I think that's maybe the understatement of the year. Back with more after this. Your phone calls as well. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 10:50. That is 10 minutes before the hour of 11 o'clock. That is 10 minutes away from As Goes Wisconsin time with Kristen Bry and Jay Matinier across most of the Civic Media Network channels. They are on from 11 until 2 with a fine program. They will update you on what they have seen over the weekend. Maybe Kristen will tell us about her travels over the weekend. I think she had a great time this weekend. Also, a little bit of news. A little bit of news for you in terms of what's making political news. And also, in hour number three of As Goes Wisconsin, always a smile. Always something to make you feel pretty cool, pretty good. So do not miss it. It's at the top of the hour, As Goes Wisconsin with Krista Bry and Jane Matinier. Then at 2 o'clock, if you listen to us on Bull Falls Radio, WXCO in beautiful Wausau, you can listen to the talented Chad Holmes of the Chad Holmes Show. All that is news from the central part of the state. Sports as well. Chad will probably tell you a little bit about covering some high school games. Big high school boys basketball weekend. One game in particular had a pretty lousy call at the end of the game. Pretty questionable. As one kid went to put up the winning shot. It would have been the winning shot. And the referee called a foul on the defender, which from the angles I've seen, I really cannot see that foul. And so the kid trying to shoot the three-pointer went to the line. I think the game was tied. That was it. Went to the line, made his first free throw, game over. And that team won. So, I mean, just, you know, pretty sad when an official has to determine the game at the end of that like that, especially for a high school game. But congratulations to all the teams that participated locally throughout the state of Wisconsin. Always a fun time of year. Of course, we had the girls' state tournament last week, boys' state basketball tournament. Wrestling is now done. And so on to spring sports. We have girls' softball, boys' baseball, track getting underway. I can remember sitting out this time of year or in a couple of weeks, some cold track meets for the godsons down in Monroe, Wisconsin. But I look back and it was a fun time. It wasn't always fun at the time sitting there waiting for all the races to get done. But now looking back, you're super glad you have those memories. So spring sports season underway. So that is the Chad Holmes Show at 2 o'clock from 2 until 4. On the rest of the network at 2 o'clock, it is Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers and Brian Kelly. They'll be along to take you down all sorts of tangents. Their Friday garbage bin dive, dumpster dive. They'll bring you all the stories that happened this weekend. Get you up to speed, up to date. And then coming up at 3 o'clock, put down the phones, put down the drinks, focus on what's going on. You got 1 hour. It is direct. It is Matt Flynn direct. You're not woke if you don't know history. Lines are always open. It's a great program, and I'll guarantee you, Matt will walk you through what's going on with this Trump indictment. He is an attorney, a former head of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and an attorney. He knows his stuff inside and out. Also, we're 2 weeks away, as of tomorrow, from the Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. Who will be our next justice? What will be the makeup of the court? Right now, it's 4-3 in favor of the conservatives. If Judge Janet Protasiewicz is elected on April 4th, Tuesday, it'll be a 4-3 progressive or liberal majority. What's going on with these attacks by this goofball Dan Kelly, who, by the way, remember Dan Kelly accepted over $100,000 of Republican money, both state and federal, to help advise on stealing the vote in 2020 to come up with this alternate slate of electors that Ron Johnson and Pence were involved in. It was Dan Kelly who was paid over $100,000 to advise them legally how to do this. And now this goofball wants to be back on the Supreme Court? No, thank you. An important race. And Kelly's people are making up all kinds of ridiculous crap to take down Judge Janet Protasiewicz, a great judge. Needs our vote to save democracy on April 4th. Matt Flynn, I'm sure we'll talk about that today. Then coming up at 4 o'clock, our flagship show, The Devil's Advocates with Crudy and Dom. It's never personal. It's only politics. It's The Devil's Advocate. At 6, Native Roots, a Native American perspective on all things politics and life. And at 8 o'clock, The Rick Smith Show, Across America. That is the lineup for today. Going to be a great one. In case you missed it, I bet you that, I think that this broke while Julian Tangens was on the air. Maybe they talked, they did talk about it a little bit. But maybe in the dumpster dive, they'll come back and talk about this Wisconsin news that broke on Friday afternoon, in case you missed it. Long time Secretary of State Doug La Follette said, I'm done, resigned immediately. And under the state constitution, the governor then appoints a successor, and Governor Tony Evers appointed former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski to be our new state of Secretary of State for the state of Wisconsin. A lot of speculation about what went on there. I mean, I'm not going to lie about that. Was this all calculated so that La Follette, with the longtime name ID, would win, hold the seat, and then retire and give this to Godlewski, of course, who bowed out in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate? But I want to be careful. That's speculation. We don't know that. We, as far as I know, Doug La Follette has not come forward and given an interview or said why he decided to retire. I hope he's well. God forbid there is a health issue. He could have wanted to resign for that. Maybe there's a personal family issue. We don't know why Doug La Follette resigned yet. I will tell you, I'm very impressed with Sarah Godlewski. She's been on our colleague Pat Kreitlow's show in the morning. I'm impressed with her.
I am too, as I produce that show, yes. So I get to hear those conversations.
I think she's going to be great. I think she has a bright political future. And let me just say this. If this was kind of a cooked-up deal on the Democratic side, let me remind you, my friends, as someone who sat on the inside of Republican caucus meetings, the Republicans would have done the same exact thing. It's all about power, and it's all about keeping control. And these days, when we have a former president of the United States and the Trumpster over the weekend calling for riots once again in this country to save his posterior, I'll stick with the party that believes in democracy right now. It might not be perfect, but nothing else really matters. Until we secure democracy. So remember that. Appreciate your time today. Appreciate the caller, Tom Crofton. We appreciate all of you for listening in. Mr. Zomers, appreciate you immensely for your work on the board today. We'll be back with another show tomorrow. Until then, this is the Todd Allball Show. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. And whatever you're fighting for, democracy, whether it's something in your community, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. Your day will come. Keep banging it. Adios. Keep banging on your drum. Keep banging on, and your day will come.